Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I'm your host Sawyer as always, and today we are finishing up our 70s car chase scene theme. And I was, what an interesting journey this movie took me on. Today we're going to be talking about Gone in 60 Seconds, not the Nick Cage movie, by the way, the original 1974 film, which up until a few months ago, I did not realize was even a thing. I knew I wanted to do the French Connection. I knew there was a car chase scene that was really famous, and that gave me the idea, let's do car chase scenes. And then as I was looking through other movies, I realized that there was a lot of car chase movies in the 70s. And so I thought, oh, how fun would that be if we did just this kind of retro 70s car chase thing? Because it seems like that was like almost the decade where car chase scenes became really famous. Obviously, we have Bullet in 68, but that may have, you know, put it on the map. There are car chase scenes in the past. I'm sure you could do an entire series on just the history of car chase scenes. I'm sure there are a bunch in the past, but this type of high-octane, over-the-top action car chase scene movies seems to have come together in the 70s. And this movie from 1974, so we're kind of slowly making our way through the early 70s. French Connection was 71, White Lightning is 73, and then now we are firmly in 1974. And when I say firmly, I mean firmly. This movie feels so 70s, it's insane. I mean, truly, I was talking last week about how White Lightning was a time capsule of sorts for that time, that culture, that Deep South 70s culture. And this movie is very much a time capsule in and of itself as well. It's more of a time capsule for the style of the 70s. The vibe of the movie is very 70s in that it has lots of bad picture quality and the audio quality is very suspect. So that seems to be a very big thing in the 70s and it annoys me. But at the same time, there is something very genuine about it and very of the time. Also, the hairstyles and the outfits. I mean, this is so 70s. The big hair, the overdone makeup, bell bottoms galore, sideburns, and dark glasses with the gold rims on them. And the cars, too. There's so many classic cars in this movie. I mean, it's kind of hard to even list them all. And of course, this is a car movie. I mean, it's Gone in 60 Seconds. The entire movie revolves around cars. So it makes sense that there would be lots of those in this movie. And golly, you know, I grew up, I think one of the reasons why I like these kind of movies, too, is because I grew up, my brother is a really big car guy. He's kind of like a wizard with cars. And he has like an encyclopedic knowledge of everything car, from mundane to special. I mean, he's a classic car restorator for 10 years. I mean, he's definitely knows everything when it comes to cars. I could just imagine watching this with him, and every 2 seconds he'd be like, oh, there's that. Oh, sweet. 1971 Ferrari. I love that model. You know, he knows all that kind of stuff. So by proxy, you know, growing up with him as my older brother, I think some of that rubbed off on me. And I also just appreciate looking at some good old classic cars. And in this film, watching them drive around and race around and apparently crash as well. So let's actually get into the movie. This was such a weird cinematic journey for me. One of the strangest I've ever had, because the movie is literally a tale of two films. I mean, in some ways it is just two movies. And I will explain why. So the first half is really kind of boring. It's a little interesting. I was definitely with it for the first like 20 minutes maybe. Because if you've watched the remake of Gone in 60 Seconds, there is some similar things with that, where basically they take junk cars or cars that have already, you know, they're being impounded or they're about to be crushed, and they take the license plates and the VIN plates off of them, and then they put them on new cars that they've stolen. They swap them out, and so it looks like they don't register as stolen vehicles. Which is very smart, especially for the time in the 70s when there isn't as much electronic processing. And I really enjoyed kind of learning about the operation. And also they work for, it's called it Chase Research, which is kind of, basically it's an insurance company, or it's a contractor for an insurance company who does research on stolen vehicles. So they're very much putting themselves in a position where no one would, one, suspect them, and two, they can get a lot of inside knowledge. So it's actually really ingenious. I love the concept of the movie in that sense. And then they get this huge order basically from some South American drug lord who is saying they want them to steal like 44 cars in a few days. Basically, it's a huge order, and it's not something they've ever done before, And so that's what the first half of the movie is, just them trying to get all those cars and put them in their lot and get away with it. And some of the cars are crazy. You know, there are a lot of Rolls Royces, and there's that 1971 Ferrari that I was talking about. There's also a 1969 Lotus Europa, which is cool, and a 1974 Manta Mirage. That's a big one. That one gets a lot of play in the narrative. So some really high-end cars, too. So they're not just stealing some Joe Schmo car off the, you know, lot. They're having to do these basically car heists. It's a heist movie of sorts, but just for cars. And there's like that 70s kind of like, boom, you know, kind of music in the background to get you along. So in a way, it is very 70s, very heist movie. And at the same time, very boring. I'm sorry. Like, the first bit was kind of fun. You're learning the character. There's also this really weird style that they do where, if you know the concept, and like, especially within documentaries, of A-roll, B-roll, basically it's when there is an audio overlay over the imagery that is different from what you're actually seeing. So say there's a conversation, in this instance, there's a conversation going on between two of the characters that are on screen, but it's not that the dialogue is not being shown. It's them doing something else. So it's kind of like it is relevant to what the people are doing, but it's not them actually talking. So a good example in a documentary would be like, say, like any of the wildlife documentaries where you got David Attenborough talking, and what you're seeing on the screen is relative to what he's talking about. They correspond, but you don't actually see David Attenborough talking. You just hear him as a narrator. It's the same thing. There's a narration of a dialogue going on. And this is like, the reason why I even break this down is because this is a big part of the movie. I mean, for a good section of the movie, there's not much dialogue in the scene where you're seeing people's mouths move and they're talking to each other. There is some, but not a lot. And a lot of it is just people basically going over the skinny, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do with the heist, while you're watching them actively work on cars or work on getting the heist getting going. So it's a very strange thing. I kind of dug it at first, but after a while it got a little tiring. Also, it seemed like maybe possibly a cheap low budget trick because they didn't have very good in scene audio equipment. So like, say you don't have good mics or anything that can pick up, or you're in a shop, so it's like the acoustics are really bad. So hiding a mic inside of the shop, getting the in scene audio is hard to do. So they just, what they can do is basically capture the audio in another room that's more soundproof in the studio even, and then overlay that on the imagery that you have. So that way you don't have to get bad sounds in scene. So that's just kind of, you know, it's getting a little bit in the weeds there, but I just, that was a very important part of the first half of the movie. And it kind of, at first I liked it, and a little bit after a while, I thought it was maybe like gimmicky and just didn't really grip you very much. There needed to be a little bit more of a narrative in this movie, and there wasn't much of one at all. And so by about 30 to 50 minutes, like in that time frame, I was really checked out. I'm going to be honest. Like, I was like going to the bathroom and leaving it on, you know, like it just wasn't very gripping. It was interesting. It was cool to watch, especially for the time capsule parts. But then, now here's the thing. Like I said, this is a tale of two movies. So there's this character in the movie, and when I say character, I mean this is really a character, and the character is a car. It's a 1971 Ford Mustang named Eleanor, and I'm not kidding. It gets top billing on the title screen. So on the opening credits, it says starring Eleanor, which, I mean, if you want to watch a car movie, you know, so for car enthusiasts, like, look no further, because Gone in 60 Seconds is like the car movie for car people. To the point where in their star billing, they have Eleanor, the vehicle, right on front. So this is yellow 1971 Ford Mustang that is honestly like really cool looking. I can probably see my brother being like, oh, that model's actually pretty gross. But, you know, because usually when you think of the Mustang, a lot of times you think of the 60s, like as far as the classic Mustang goes. But this is like a new Mustang, 1971, new model. It's got like a... it's got more of a hatchback on the back, which is it's weird, but I honestly kind of like it personally, especially maybe because you get so much screen time with it. But anyway, I know that for car enthusiasts and people who like cars and movies, this is probably some like iconic car that has been, you know, talked about for decades, and I just didn't know that. But I thought that was so cool. Basically, going back to the story, the main character has this obsession with Eleanor. He really wants to take Eleanor and put it in the collection. It's part of the 44 cars, but it's personal too. He loves that car and he wants it. And so they even earlier in the movie, they find an Eleanor and they steal it, but it's not insured. And the whole idea is getting this insured insurance scams. If the car isn't insured, then it doesn't really matter. You need, like, you have to get a new car because you're not going to get any money out of it, and the order will be incomplete. And so while his girlfriend, the main character's girlfriend, is kind of being like, we don't need it, come on, you've gotten 43 cars, like, I think you've done a good job, like, it's too hot, like, going out and trying to steal another car. And they're starting to get a sense that maybe they're starting, you know, there's some stuff, like, the cops are starting to catch on a little bit. Anyway, so they do find another Eleanor, and this one is at this, like, business tower complex in Long Beach, and there's this, like, kind of parking garage that they have to go down into to get the car. And, you know, as you've been watching this whole half of the movie, you know that the main character, Madrian Pace, is, like, too cool for school. He's got this stuff down to a science. He can walk in, act like nothing's going on, and just steal a car in 2 seconds and not even – well, that's the idea. Gone in 60 seconds. He can just – very quickly, within a minute, just grab a car and drive off like he owns it. And so he's trying to do the exact same thing. He's just, you know, going through the motions, doing the same thing he's always done. But the thing is that there's just been this whole side plot where him and his brother are at odds. He owns the business, the operation, and his brother is kind of a mess up. It doesn't really do very well. And once they steal a car that has heroin in it, and the brother wants to keep the heroin, and Madrian's like, nah, that's not the kind of business we do. That's dangerous. And so he burns the car. And so the brother's really mad, and he feels spiteful. So he calls the cops an anonymous tip and says, you might want to stake out these buildings in Long Beach because a car is going to be stolen. And it's like, wow, you know, you really just sent your brother over the edge for what? Like, it's your brother. I mean, I was pretty, like, I kind of gasped because I wasn't expecting something like that. But here's the thing. So this is about 52 minutes into the movie. He steals the car. The cops are staking out. They see that he's stolen the car. They start chasing him. And I am not exaggerating. The entirety of the rest of the film is that one chase scene. The movie is 97 minutes long. About 52 to 54 minutes into the movie, this scene happens where the chase scene starts. So that means for about 45 minutes or so, you know, give or take, this car chase scene is happening. I mean, I don't know if there is a record or what, but I would say, in my knowledge, that is the longest car chase scene, like continuous car chase scene in cinema, in cinematic history. I mean, there's just no way, I can't think of another one. The only thing I could think of was Mad Max Fury Road, because in some ways the entire movie is a car chase scene, but still not in the way that this car, like the high octane, just like going around corners, going around. I mean, just to give you an idea of what happens, I saw a note that said that 93, in a 97 minute movie, 93 cars are wrecked or crashed. Which is just, that just goes to show you how many wrecks there are in the movie. There's one pile up on a bridge that, I mean, you sit there and watch. And this is like old cars. These are old metal cars that you're seeing crash. And this is before CGI. These are practical crashes. You're seeing like 5, 6, 7 cars come in at like 30, 40, sometimes 50 miles an hour to hit the back of another car. And it is just brutal to watch. Meanwhile, I mean, and this is the funny thing too. The cops don't even exactly know. They just know he's trying to steal a car. And then in the end, because he won't stop and because they can't catch him, they kind of get it in their, like it gets stuck in their crawl and they have to keep going. And so next thing you know, you've got literally the feds, you got helicopters, you got the entire city, the entire LA County. I mean, the entire state of California is now involved in this long drawn out car chase. And he just like will not stop. Madrian Pace is played by the director and writer H.B. Halicki, who I think is a Polish man because they make a lot of jokes about him being Polish in the movie. So that Halicki kind of sounds Polish. But anyway, he's the writer, director, and star. And, of course, he does his own stunts. So it sounds to me like he's a big car guy and he really wanted to drive. And I'm telling you, he's really driving this stuff. I mean, we talked before in French Connection about how they kind of went off the certified areas and was actually like weaving in and out of traffic. There's a bit of that to this as well. I think it was done a little bit more by the books. However, there were a lot of bystanders that are filmed in the movie that really genuinely thought this was like some huge police chase. And there is even one scene where a guy is, you can see a guy yelling for the cops being like, why aren't you stopping and helping these people? Because they make a big deal in this car chase scene of showing all the wreckage and all the people getting injured. I mean, sometimes cars get caught on fire and there's bystanders that try to come in and take them out, you know, because the doors are jammed. I mean, this is like insane. You got the fire department is getting involved. They set up, like, I'm telling you, I can't even count how many different types of roadblocks they try to set up, like with cars, with actual like roadblockers, with so many things. And he just crashes right through them. He crashes that car. Poor Eleanor. He crashes the car more times than I literally can count. There's one in particular that's so bad. He's on the interstate and he hits a pole, like whips around, tries to whip around and just nails a pole right in his front left fender. And, apparently, like, I remember being like, ooh, and I'm like, how is that car driving off? I mean, you know, it's movie magic. They basically let the fender still be really dented, but they just left the wheel is just totally fine as he's driving. So, you know, it's a little fanciful, but at the same time, I read that HB Haliki, when he was driving, that was an actual crash. He actually, at 85 miles an hour, wrapped himself around a pole and had a concussion and lost consciousness for a long time. And when he woke up after losing consciousness, he said, did we get the footage? So this guy's kind of like crazy. I mean, obviously he's crazy. Apparently there's a big jump in the movie, a huge jump, which of course I thought was cool because the remake kind of tries to recreate that jump. In the remake, Nicolas Cage at the end is actually driving a Mustang, if I remember correctly. And it might have even been an older Mustang, like from the 60s. I want to say, let me look it up real fast. Yeah, it's a 1968 Shelby GT, which is so funny because this movie, which was made in 1974, has the main character is a 71 Mustang. But anyway, there's a big jump at the end of that movie, and there's a big jump at the end of this one as well. In the big jump in the end of this movie, HB Haliki is actually driving the car. It's a practical jump. I think he jumps like 30 or 35 feet into the air. And then apparently he kind of hurt his spine afterwards. So he really did some damage to himself and Eleanor, unfortunately, in order to create this, I mean, insanely impressive, but just like absurdly long car chase scene. You know, it's so funny because the first half of the movie, there weren't many car chase scenes. There's probably two. One was at night and it was really hard to see what was going on. The second one was with a tow truck driver. And that one was kind of cool, but it was really short. So I was like, okay, like, where's the car? I mean, this is a car movie. This is like Gone in 60 Seconds. This should be like the car chase movie. And oh boy, was I right without realizing it. That second half hit and I said, oh, there it is. And not only there it is, but that's the rest of the movie. As I'm like literally checking the runtime because it's like 5 minutes left and the car chase scene is still going on. And I'm like, how are they going to wrap this movie up in any amount of time if it's just this car chase scene? And it literally doesn't. Like, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the entire... I mean, I guess... I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's 1974. Basically, he gets another Eleanor. He beats this one up to, like, to a ridiculous amount. Then he goes to a car wash, finds another Eleanor just as he's driving by, and does a switcheroo to where he gets a newer Eleanor, and the old one is thrown out. And so he can get away that way. But and then he just kind of like rides off into the sunset. I mean, that's the end of the movie, which is so funny. I mean, as a movie, like cinematically, like it is so unconventional that it would be hard to say it's good. Like it's a good movie. It's more of like nowadays you'd be like, it's like a really long YouTube video. Like it's like, oh, this YouTube creator wanted to make the longest car chase scene you could think of. Except for the fact that in this movie, they actually created a movie that had a narrative somewhat for the first half of the movie. But the second half of the movie has no narrative. It's just a car chase scene. The narrative is this guy going, like, trying to get away from the police. It's GTA. It's Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit. Like, that's the movie, which is so cool. But at the same time, it's not a movie. Like, I don't know. My head has a hard time wrapping itself around this because any narrative that was created in the first half is just thrown away in the second half because it's just a car chase scene, which I kind of am totally fine with and love because I tell you what, I started paying attention in that second half. I was actually watching the movie. I was in awe. I was literally had my mouth agape watching that second half of the movie. In the first half, I was in Boros Noroville. So, I mean, in a way, I'm glad that it ended up being that way. But if I'm trying to rate this movie, I'm like so confused. I mean, I would give it a solid 5 out of 10 for the first half. And then like a 7.5 out of 10 for the second, if not higher. I mean, I just don't know how to rate that because it's not a movie. It's just one scene. So I don't know. It's so hard. I think I'm going to go with a 7 out of 10 with White Knight Lightning, just because it's so unique. It's so audacious in a way. Just to like, I mean, I just sometimes I do love in movies where people just go all out. They just decide, like, I'm going to do this thing. It's kind of novel. It's a novelty movie of sorts. Like, I honestly could say, if anybody wants to watch this, it's on Tubi, of course, because of course it is. And I would recommend just skipping the first half, unless you just have nothing else to do. But just wait until you get that scene where he steals the Eleanor and just watch the rest of that. And you'll save yourself a lot of time because that's the most important part of the movie. And looking at this H.B. Haleki guy, I mean, it definitely feels like this movie was him wanting to do a long car chase scene. Like when he's pitching it to the executives, he says, we're going to steal some cars. We're going to do like a little like insurance scam operation. And then the second half, I'm going to get in this car and we're going to do the longest car chase scene in all of cinematic history. And I guess it worked because they ended up making it. I mean, everything else about the movie is low budget, but oh my God, the budget that has to be made in order to have all these cars crash, all these police cars and helicopters chasing after them. I mean, and for it to be so prolonged, all the crowd control you have to do in order to film a movie like that. I mean, that's where the budget went 100%. And to have all these cars on screen, you had to rent a lot of those cars, of course. And this car chase scene, it truly rivals the Blues Brothers, which is saying a lot because that's probably one of the best car chase scenes of all time. But it has that same vibe where it's just a bunch of cop cars like wrecking on each other and stuff like that. It's just crazy. I mean, literally about 3 or 4 times he gets surrounded, like he stops and gets surrounded by cop cars who are all pointing guns at him. And then he ends up getting out and driving more. And it's just like, it's like ridiculous on ridiculous. It's kind of like sometimes a repetitive joke is like not funny. Like, or it's funny and then you do it too much and then it becomes not funny, but then you keep going and you go so long that it becomes funny again. This is like a car chase scene like that, where it's so cool at first. You're like, oh, finally a car chase scene. And then you're like, okay, this is going on a little bit long. And then you're like, oh, this is going on like really long. And then by the time you're at minute 30, you're in. You're just locked in. It's like absolute curiosity. You're like, how could this go on any further? And it just keeps going. It's insane. So I obviously in a theme where we're doing car chase scenes from the 70s, this is the epitome of that. Maybe car chase scene, maybe not plural, but it is the epitome of a car chase scene from the 70s because that is half the movie. And as far as the theme goes, I couldn't ask for anything better. This epitomizes the theme more than any of the other two movies. And I really appreciate that it exists. And, you know, growing up, I liked the remake. I mean, I think a lot of it was because it reminded me of my brother. I was really young and it was like, my brother probably thinks this is cool, so I think it's cool. And also the premise of the new one is maybe a little bit better as a movie, because instead of just having this random order of 44 cars to steal, the whole movie surrounds like the brother being like, I guess, kidnapped. It's been a long time, but I think he gets like kidnapped or he's held hostage, and basically they have to steal 44 cars within one day. So it like really puts the crunch on. I think narratively, plot wise, that is a lot tighter and creates a lot more drama. So I think maybe as a movie, the remake is better. But since it doesn't have the entire second half of the movie being a car chase scene, you know, it's kind of hard to say. Anyway, 7 out of 10, a very interesting movie. Lots of good little tidbits there. Having the writer, director, and main character being the stunt driver as well. There's definitely some intrigue going on in that movie. As well as just like for the, like I said before, for the car enthusiasts, I mean, you couldn't think of a better movie. And also it's like I said, it's so 70s. So sometimes if you just want to watch a movie that just shows you what 70s fashion looked like back then, then 74, I guess it's really hitting its stride because it's like now it's in the mid 70s. And so bell bottoms are everywhere and blazers and people wearing, what are those suits? I can't remember what they're called. Like the really like pressed suits that are huge, and so many turtlenecks that I felt like I was going to vomit. I'm not a huge fan of turtlenecks. That's why. They're fine. Okay, I've made my peace with turtlenecks, but for a long time, I just don't get it. I don't want to wear a turtleneck because it's uncomfortable and it's like all up on my neck and it makes me feel like I'm choking. So maybe it's more a personal thing for me than it is the way that it looks on other people. I digress, rambling a little bit there. So 7 out of 10, great movie. Next week, what we're going to be doing is, this is kind of a weird theme. It is Fedora Man movies of the 90s. Now that sounds strange. I don't really know how to say this theme, but basically I found I was originally going to do like these early like 90s comic book movies, like these movies that, and it kind of still is that theme. It's like they feel like comic book characters. One of them definitely is. We're doing Dick Tracy. And I've been wanting to do the Dick Tracy movie with Warren Beatty for a long time. And now I have found enough other movies that fit this weird theme that I've just kind of noticed. And because they're all coming out around the same time. I think it's like 1990. One of them's like 92. One of them's 91. Something like that. And one of them's Dick Tracy. One of them's The Dark Man by Sam Raimi. I haven't seen that one, but he's also this like, you know, trench coat wearing, fedora wearing guy. Same with Dick Tracy. And then there's another one with Alec Baldwin called The Shadow, which that one, as I'm learning, was an old radio broadcast. So we've got like this old comic book, this old radio broadcast. And then I just found out too that Sam Raimi wanted to make The Shadow and was denied the rights, and so he made The Dark Man instead. So this is a very cohesive theme. I just don't know what to call it other than Dark Fedora Man movies of the 90s, because they all take place, it's like 90, 92, and 94. So very interesting. I had only heard of Dick Tracy and Dark Man. I had not heard of The Shadow, but it looks fun. So we're going to get into that next week. And I hope you guys have a great week this week, and I will see you next Friday.